Welcome to this week's episode of Atlantic Tales, when we'll hear about the annual Burrinsloe Food Festival, which will be hosted at the Pavilion in Listunvarna next month. The Burrinsloe Food Festival will return this May and will showcase some of the food for which Clare is famous. This year's event will be about nourishing body and soul through food and wellness. The festival, organised by Slow Food Clare, will take place on May 19th as part of a month-long festival of wellness hosted by the Burren Ecotourism Network. The concept of slow food sprang to life in Italy in the 1980s, when the opening of a fast food restaurant near the Spanish Steps in Rome sparked widespread national protest. This symbolic arrival of homogenization in a place so rich in history and culture convinced Italian activist and author Carlo Petrini that it was time to act, and so the slow food movement was born. Plans to develop the ever-growing international movement in Clare began with two people, including the owner of the Burren Smokehouse, Birgitta Hedin Curtin, but it all started in Italy.
So we go back to 2004. Myself and Michael Gleason, we actually did go out to Turin to the international slow food event in Terra Madre, it's called. It's in Turin. We decided when we met up there and met Carlo Petrini, and we were so inspired by the whole movement, which is an international movement with convivia all over the world, that we wanted to start something like that here in Clare. You know, there was a certain amount of producers, but it was an emerging area, really. The Burren had an emerging food scene here, and we wanted to celebrate that. And actually, at the first Slow Food Festival, which happened in May 2005, we had Doreen Allen here, which was amazing, and she's been very supportive all along for our Slow Food Festival.
When we say slow food, Birgitta, what exactly do we mean by slow food?
So slow food as opposed to fast food, it actually was launched by Carlo Petrini when the first fast food chain started to show their name in Italy, in Rome, and he was abhorred. He said, this is terrible. We must value our own food culture. So he actually started this day as a reaction to fast food coming in, fast food chains coming in.
And this is all about, of course, promoting our own food in County Clare, particularly in this case in the Burren, and there are so many wonderful producers.
Yeah, so I suppose in every region of and every place, it's about local food. It's about sharing food together. It's about using local foods in your restaurant, at home, and knowing also small batch production. It's about nutritious food. It's about the short travel to you can buy locally and support your producers locally, whether you're an individual or you have a business. And it's also hearing the chefs that are working with the food and creating the food in the region with the culture that exists in that particular region, like the Burren. And I think that over the years we've really come on with that, and also we have so many producers to hero right now, and it's not only about the Burren Smokehouse or the Sanctuola Gauches or the Linala ice cream or whatever. It's us collectively working together. And I suppose in 2005, the Burren Ecotourism Network did not exist, but it does now. So it's an amplification. The two go hand in hand, the Burren Ecotourism Network along with the Slow Food. It's similar principles, slightly different organisations, but that's showcasing the food in the area. So it's just amplifying what we have in the area. And I think it has really grown the last few years, because there's so many more producers and so many more establishments opening up and coming up with very creative menus using local produce. When we started, it was only ourselves here, 1998. But since then, there are so many producers that have opened up the doors to tell their story, to tell about, to like Sanctuola Gauches. You go down and you can see the kids, and you can book a tour if you want to on the days that it's available. You can go to Alloy Caves to the cheese making facility, and you can see how it's been made. You can taste the cheese. It's all about taste and experience and learning how it's made, and that's really, really important. And also you can taste the flavor, you can taste nutrition in these small batch productions. It's an incredible source and incredible richness that we have here, both for ourselves and also for, of course, for food tourism experiences for people coming from Dublin, within Ireland, or internationally.
In more recent years, the Burrinslow Food Festival has been helping raise awareness of geofood. The geofood brand was launched at the event in 2022 and now has 12 food producers on board. For a producer to use the geofood brand, they must meet strict criteria. Carol Gleason is manager of the Burren and Cliffs of Moher UNESCO Global Geopark.
UNESCO Global Geoparks, they're a worldwide organisation, as you can gather, and there's about 180 of them all over the world. And really what their fundamental basis is about sustainable development using the geological uniqueness of a particular place, as well as the cultural and biodiversity elements of that place as well. So it's not just about the rocks and the geology, it's about what comes out of that whole environment. The biodiversity it creates, you know, the traditions that come out of that in terms of how people settled in the place and, you know, the whole history of people in that particular place. And then, it's, of course, it's kind of used for tourism in an awful lot of the geoparks to develop tourism. So we try and emphasise sustainable tourism as well. And one of the things that we really try to work on here in this particular geopark is we've got a lot of tourism, as you well know, but it's how to make it more sustainable in the future, you know. So we have a whole network of businesses that we work with, and they're the Burren Ecotourism Network. And we develop a whole range of sustainable tourism programs with them. And one of them that has emerged out of other geoparks and that we're adopting here as well is the whole idea of sustainable food, local food being bought and purchased and eaten locally, and that's called the Geofood Programme. Over 40 geoparks around the world now have adopted that, and we've signed up to it as well.
How did we become aware of geofood, and why did we decide to get involved in that side of it?
Well, it started off in 2013, a geopark in Norway, Magma Geopark, and the people who work in Magma Geopark decided that they really wanted to focus in on the development of the food story in their place, and it just escalated from there. A few more geoparks decided, yes, they wanted to get involved in that program. They got some European funding, etc. So now there are about 40 geoparks in the program, and the idea around the program is very much about focusing in on community and on the idea that this food is produced within the community for the community, but it can also be absolutely promoted as something for visitors to enjoy as well. So it's a combination of developing the whole idea of, you know, that you can purchase local food locally, but also trying to encourage people to eat their local food as well. It's also part of the whole sustainable development goals too, to kind of reduce food miles, to encourage people to eat really good, well-developed food, you know, sustainably developed food in their locality, that it's good for your health and good for your well-being. It's good for the local economy. It's good in terms of climate change because you're focusing in on what's produced locally. You're helping the environment as well.
Who then can truly say that they are part of the geofood organization or concept?
It has criteria. So it's a brand and it's a concept and it has particular values. And the idea is that a producer cannot really say that they're a geofood product if the core of their product is not produced within the geopark. So you have to have at least 50% of the raw ingredient being produced in or very close to the geopark. So for example, some of the fish products, as long as they're coming from Galway Bay, you know, which is bordering the geopark, then, you know, it fulfills the criteria. But if you take, a produce that's produced somewhere else, that's actually grown somewhere else, and you're adding value to it within the geopark, that's not really a geofood. The actual core raw ingredient has to come from within the geopark area. It's emphasising the fact that they're in a UNESCO Global Geopark. That's a hard-won designation, and you have to maintain that designation as well. We're revalidated every 4 years, so we have people that come and make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing in terms of, you know, of achieving the actual designation. So it's, I suppose, in a sense, it's kind of promoting the fact that we have achieved this international, very well known, UNESCO approved designation. And it's adding value, I guess, to the idea of that the food is coming from a place that is internationally recognized and has that this international designation associated with it. So it's an added value, in a sense, to the already incredible quality of the food produce that we have here and the food product that we have here. And being part of a global movement that really supports sustainable development and really celebrates very important aspects of our area, such as, you know, our nature, our biodiversity, our geological heritage and our communities and the cultural heritage that supports these communities as well. I mean, that's really important to emphasize. And I think more and more people are looking to find places that promote this element of who they are. And I think it is something that will definitely appeal to the culturally curious. It'll definitely appeal to people who want more of an experience rather than just a journey, that they wanted opportunities to be able to explore and to understand places on a deeper level. So I think that UNESCO Global Geoparks really try to emphasize that and work with local businesses to achieve that. So it adds a deeper layer of experience and of appreciation, I think, to a person's experience of travel here.
Peter Jackson is chef proprietor of the Roadside Tavern in Listunvarna. He is proud to serve local produce, much of which he believes is the best in the world. He and his team will play a big part in this year's Burnslow Food Festival. He began training as a chef in Limerick as a teenager.
I lied about my age. I was only 15 and was looking for a summer job. So it was a lovely, well-known restaurant in Limerick at the time called Mall Darby's. Going back before that, I always liked experimenting with cooking, and my aunt used to own a little cafe in Parnell Street in Limerick called the Red Rose Cafe. And any time I could get an opportunity, I'd be in there and trying to give a hand, you know, just learning a few stuff. Always liked to dabble in cooking from a kid onwards. So when I was 15, I got into my first professional kitchen as a kitchen porter. And I suppose the head chef there at the time, Dave Gagan, saw that I had a real liking for cooking, it wouldn't have been passion at the time, but I was inquisitive. You know, I'd always rush to get my kitchen porter jobs done so I could get over and give one of the chefs a hand doing some form of preparation. So after about 2 weeks in the kitchen doing that, he moved me across and put me into chef whites. And I suppose over many years, I've worked in some top restaurants around the world. So from London, Scotland, Australia, and then came back to Ireland back in 2008, just when the last financial crisis was happening. And I suppose due to the downturn then in Limerick, because I suppose so much industry went, so likes of Dell closed, and I was executive chef in the Clarion at the time, I relocated down here to County Clare, to Doolin. Fell in love with County Clare. My mum's family were all from County Clare and the Burn, and I suppose it was just rediscovering the magic of down here in West and North Clare. I was the executive chef in the Armada Hotel in Spanish Point for nearly 10 years. And then just after the C word, COVID, I took over the running of the Roadside Tavern here in Listunvarna.
When we talk about food nowadays, we're all talking about using what we can get locally. Back when you started out, was it as easy to do it then as it is now?
It was much easier back then because everything came locally. You know, there was none of these big companies here in Ireland at the time. It's a different ball game now, and I'm not going to name companies, but you can literally use one company for a one-stop shop, and most of it is price based and driven, so you're not getting the quality of produce, you're just buying as cheap and cheerful as you can, and just conveniently, no more so than people are doing at home. I suppose as a chef, my first real introduction to slow food, but it wouldn't have been called slow food at the time, is when I was working in Scotland. So I was working in a really remote restaurant up there, and literally the sheep and the cows you saw on the hills is what was coming into your back door. The fish, you were going down to the pier every day and buying your fish from the lads coming in on the boats, and growing your own veg, growing all your own herbs. And then you might get a dry goods delivery once every 2 weeks coming out of Glasgow. So that was where I first really fell in love with using produce directly. And when I came back from Australia and we relocated down here to the Burn, it's nearly the exact same as when I was in Scotland. The produce down here is amazing. The producers, the passion that, you know, the farmers, the growers and the producers have down here is second to none. So as a chef, being down here in North Clare and West Clare, we're blessed with the bounty that surrounds us.
Was that one of the draws, the fact that you were getting good quality food locally and pretty easily in the Burren area?
Not that it was one of the draws. I suppose what I really fell in love with was the passion of the people and being surrounded by passionate people. Your own passion and your own inspiration starts to flourish again. I suppose when I kind of got to, I suppose, the top end of the industry and working in multinational hotels, that kind of went out the window. You know, you're more based on making figures for companies and, you know, getting the bottom line, and, you know, you're in charge of HR and you're mostly in charge of the business end of things. So coming down here, it reignited, I suppose, my fire for cooking really good food. And as I say, like, a lot of our guests that come in here are saying, wow, that was the best lamb I've ever had, or that smoked salmon is amazing. All we're kind of doing is just finishing a product and putting it on the plate. The real hard work is done by the likes of our lamb. It's from Kilshanny. I know the farmer, Kevin Howley, with the smoked salmon. It's the passion from Brigida Hiding Curtain up here in the Burren Smokehouse that makes possibly the best smoked salmon in the world. So it's very easy for us as a chef to bring ingredients together and let the produce do the talking. And, you know, on our menus, you know, everybody's named that we're buying from. So, as I say, whether it's Kevin Howley's lamb, whether it's Gerrihy Seafood in Doolin, you know, even from seaweed that we get from West Clare. We name everybody, we give everybody the recognition that they deserve for their hard work on our menus, and we make sure that everybody comes in knows that they can go and see these places. So Centola's ghost cheese, I think, is the best ghost cheese in the world. But our philosophy is, like, if you can taste it on our menus, you can go and visit these places. So whether it's down on the Flaggy Shore, as I said, Centola's, the Burren Smokehouse, you know, our own brewery upstairs. It's just an area that gives so much down here in the Burren.
In a way, you're all working together. You could come up here and do your own thing and not name those producers on your menu. But by naming those producers, working with them and knowing the farmers and the other producers, you're very proud of what's going on in Clare, and you're happy to share that with your visitors and your customers.
Oh, you know, I'm extremely proud of where we are. And, you know, we like to showcase it to the world. And working together, we create our own, I suppose, micro industry and climate down around here. It's very good for, I suppose, how do we put it, our food miles. But, you know, if I recommend somebody to go, as I say, to the Smokehouse or to Centola Ghost Cheese, I'm sure in turn they'll recommend them to come here to us. Or I'll always try, we have a philosophy down here, you know, try and get people to stay longer, you know, stay another night. And, like, we have a map here that we have as part of the Burren Ecotourism Network and the Geopark, where we pinpoint places for tourists that are moving on to go and see. So, you know, I'll always recommend people to, if they're going up north to Galway, to continue along out the coast road up by Fionnuala, stop in O'Donoghue's, have something there, or go around Ballyvaughan, stay there, listen to some music in one of the hotels. Or if they don't have time, I'll always say, you know, stop at Paul Nabroon Dolman Stone, make sure you see that in the Burren. When you're going on, head off up to New Quay, up to Lynella Ice Cream, amazing ice cream up there on the Flaggy Shore. Or we close on a Monday and Tuesday, so if there's guests that were staying here, I'd recommend them to go to Lenan's on the Monday, or back down to Doolin maybe, to one of the pubs down there. Or if they're heading south then and they're going to Kerry from here, which a lot of people do, I'll recommend that they follow it all the way down, stop in the Armada or stop in Lahinch or someplace else. Just have them stop somewhere else in Clare and not just as a stopgap kind of coming through here.
Would you have seen that in other countries that you worked in, that local communities, local businesses are working together, promoting each other?
I suppose at the start of my career in Limerick, there was a case because we had the Good Food Circle there, and there was always a great collaboration there that kind of subsided a number of years back. But down here, the passionate people and the passion people have for their area and wanting it to be seen, it was just, yeah. When I first came to Doolin, it was something that was only new and starting, and it was basically part of how do we draw people here and not just make it a 3 or 4 month seasonal thing. It's like we work together, so it was like, you know, working with different pubs instead of like everybody having music at the weekends, trying to get people to, like, if you have music on a Tuesday night, we'll send our guests to you on Tuesday night, and you on a Wednesday night, you on a Thursday night. And then it was just kept going, kept the season going longer and longer and longer. And I think that just that mantra has always just fed around here in Clare. I think I haven't seen it anywhere else in my travels, but here in County Clare, it's pretty magical to witness and be part of.
That was Peter Jackson, chef proprietor of the Roadside Tavern in Listunvarna. We'll hear more from Peter shortly. Also, yoga instructor Colette Nagel will tell us what part she'll play in this year's Burren Slow Food Festival. Welcome back to Atlantic Tales. The Burren Slow Food Festival, organised by Slow Food Clare, will take place on May 19th as part of a month-long festival of wellness hosted by the Burren Ecotourism Network. The much-loved Burren Slow Food Banquet will take place in the Burren Storehouse the night before the festival commences. Peter Jackson is chef proprietor at the Roadside Tavern in Listunvarna. He and his team will create a six-course dinner with locally produced ingredients. On his own menus, he proudly tells diners where all his produce comes from, because telling the story of local food is also an important part of the dining experience.
I think that a lot of the work has been done by people that have been here for ages. So like the Burren Ecotourism Network, the slow food movement that Brigitte has brought in here, they've been singing a long time about this. And I suppose when I came here then and took over the Roadside, that it was just continuing on with something that had been built on already, and we're just building on that. I suppose we're selling the story a little bit more. We train our staff to know who all these people are, and they in turn can tell our customers about it. But I think the Burren and North Clare have been singing very strongly about it for a long, long time, and has really put it on, I suppose, the world map. You know, people will actively seek out coming to the Burren and places that, you know, carry that mantra that I've been talking about earlier. I suppose it's just depending on the customers, like our local customers will know all these people individually and then be surprised if we weren't using them. But when you have people coming from the States, they love the story, they love to hear about it. And it's a sense of place on a plate. And the thing is, like, why would we use any other ingredients? They're some of the best in the world down here. So that's why.
And you do tours here, of course, and you had a group in earlier, a group of Americans. How did they react? Well, first of all, what does the tour comprise?
They vary. So the family we had here earlier on had come from Manhattan in New York, and they had come here to do a tasting of, obviously, the world-famous Burren Smoked Salmon, and a tasting of our beers here from the brewery. So Peter Curtin continues with the Burren Brewery. We brew our own. We have our own brewery here in the pub. So we do a lovely lager, a red ale, and a stout. So they came and then tasted beers, talk with Peter about the beers, talk with Brigitte about her smoked salmon, and, you know, just in general a bit of history about the area. So Peter talks about, just for example, Tolkien and his stay in the Burren and the inspiration the Burren had on him writing Lord of the Rings, you know, about Bram Stoker and his first book he ever wrote, The Snake's Pass, and that was inspired by here in Listunvarna and the Burren. And then we'll do other various tours. So we start doing bigger coaches now coming in the season. They'll all come and, you know, whether it's tasting a local beef or local salmon, again, just beer tastings, storytelling. You know, there's many various things that we do here, as well as our regular day-to-day.
In the other places you would have worked, would there have been networks and groups and food groups in those areas, like the Burren Ecotourism Network, and we have Slow Food Clare? Were there groups like that in other places you worked?
Not as such. In the 1990s, we did a good food circle in Limerick, but anywhere else that I've kind of worked, it was everybody was just kind of fighting for their own piece of the market. It wasn't collaborating. It was just, you know, how do I get them in and just keep my business going and keep my customers coming in. But as I say, down here, it's just very different. Everybody, you know, it's a great sense of community, and everybody sings as one destination. And the idea is get the people in here. You know, if we sing as a destination, we can accomplish much more together than we can by one of us just trying to, I suppose, do it by ourselves.
The Slow Food Festival then itself, and particularly here in the Burren, how important do you believe that actually is?
The slow food movement down here, it's headed up by Brigitte from the Burren Smokehouse. I first was introduced to it probably 11 years ago. So I did my first cookery demonstration here, and it was the first time I had heard of slow food. So when I came up and looked around, and I had only been in the area a few weeks before I did my first cookery demo, and just seeing all the different producers and all the different growers and meeting people face to face, it's a great way to showcase what's being produced here in North and West Clare. So at the likes of the Slow Food Festival that will be in the Pavilion in Listoon Varna, you get to meet a lot of the producers from the area, and they'll be showcasing their goods. So whether it's burn smoked salmon, Santola goat's cheese, Flaggy Shore oysters, Alloy Caves, they have some stunning Gouda cheeses that they always showcase. Local jam makers, honey suppliers. You get to see chefs doing live cookery demonstrations. You get to meet makers of local crafts. And there's always food stalls outside. You can get to taste lots of homemade cakes. And it's a great way to spend the day and see what's around the area here. On the night before that, on the Saturday, we're going to be having our slow food banquet. So that's on the 18th in the Burn Storehouse. So we'll be doing a lovely 6-course menu there, and tickets are on sale for that on the Slow Food Clare website at the moment. Now, spaces will be limited because of the food that we will be producing, so we're only going to be doing 50 seats for that evening, and that'll give a good kickoff into a sense of what the rest of the weekend is going to be about. On the 19th then of May, it'll be in the Pavilion in Listoon Varna. So there's going to be some great cookery demonstrations there, some top class chefs from around the area. In here in North West Clare, we've even got 2 Michelin stars restaurants in our area. We've got a lot of places with rosettes, and we're blessed here with the amount of talent that will be available, and with all the demos as well, they're Q&A, so questions and answers, so you can get to interact with the chefs and ask questions, get cookery tips. They'd explain how to cook produce properly, so whether it's lovely fresh fish off the boat, how to treat it with some love, keep it simple and get the best out of ingredients, or whether it's cooking meat, the proper way to cook meat, just little tips like that. It's always good to pick up little tips and tricks from some of the leading chefs in the area.
It's not a new concept anymore, but from your own perspective, the ethos of slow food.
So for me, what slow food means is back to the way that it's being produced. A lot of words are thrown around like organic and stuff like that, but I suppose it's getting back to the traditional ways food would have been grown. Not forcing food to grow out of seasons, not forcing them to go quicker, not genetically modifying them in any way, not adding any preservatives or chemicals to it. So it's just going back to the fundamentals of what it was all about. So, it's working with seasons, it's working with, I suppose farmers, tillage farmers, and going back to swapping fields for growing, growing herbs, growing lettuces, back to farming for livestock. It was just done proper. So even with the whole farming thing, I kind of got involved with some farmers myself at the start producing Wagyu beef down outside Kilmurry Brickin there and down by Clymer. And that was a very interesting process, and the whole way that the Wagyu has to be raised, it can't be forced, it can't be fattened up. It has to happen naturally, holistically, whether it was dealing with, Fergal down on my hill and seeing how he grows these vegetables and changing. But so it really gets you stuck into where it comes from at the start and at the beginning. And if you buy into that ethos, not only are you getting the best produce to cook as a chef, you're supporting local, and you're supporting local employment as well. So that's a big benefactor for the whole slow food movement, is getting that message across to, not even just the public and Joe Soap, but to other chefs in the industry, and getting that message out there that cut out these big industries or whatever, and buying cheap and cheerful, or buying for the sake of simplicity, and just getting back to grassroots and using good food. And and I find as a chef, and where a lot of my success over the years come from, the awards that I've won, is just buying the best ingredients, not for the sake of saying it, but just for the proper taste of it. A carrot will smell like a carrot. So it's just getting back to using great produce. That's what the whole slow food movement, I think, for me, is all about.
This year's Burren Slow Food Festival is about more than just food, and is part of a month-long festival of wellness hosted by the Burren Ecotourism Network. Originally from East Clare, Colette Nagel is passionate about teaching yoga, mindfulness and meditation, and now runs Limestone Yoga Studio at Bawn Kyle near Corrafin. She'll be bringing all her experience to the Burren Slow Food Festival this year. But where did Colette's interest in yoga begin?
We grew up on a farm. When I left school, I did secretarial courses and travelled Europe and travelled a lot. Actually, was travelling, that was one of my big draws. So I was travelling a lot, and then I met Oliver Nagel and we're here right now. I suppose then, being a mom of four, it had its challenges. I worked with Continental Airlines in Shannon for 9 years. Then when I had my second baby, Aisling, I left that. So then at the age of 40, some people would say it's life-changing. It was life-changing for me. I was looking forward to being 40. I felt like as if, as much as, you know, I was a mom of four at the time, I felt like as if at 40 I grew up. And I looked at my life a little bit different, and what was I going to do now that I was a grown-up, and what would I like to do? So I loved children. I loved being pregnant most of the time, and I loved talking to pregnant women. So that's where the children's yoga came about. So I went and I trained as a children's yoga teacher. Then I went and I trained as a pregnancy yoga teacher. And then when COVID hit, I went and I trained to become a Vinyasa yoga flow teacher. So that was a really, really good time for me. And then when COVID ended, I went on then to become a restorative yoga teacher and a yin yoga teacher. So I would be, I suppose really now you'd call it in yoga world, I would be over 500 hours trained. I'd be up in the 1,000 yoga hour trained now. So before COVID, with my pregnancy yoga training, I had to go and observe 18 hours of pregnancy yoga teaching. So as it happens, I had to go to all different studios and look and see, and not studios, community centers, to observe other pregnancy yoga teachers teaching yoga. The pregnancy yoga teachers were amazing. Everything was fantastic, learned an awful lot. But the issue for me was where we were actually, I suppose, where women had to go to yoga, and where they had to, if they wanted to do yoga in pregnancy or yoga, the floor was cold. You know, the community center was cold. It wasn't an idealistic area and a space. So I came home to Oliver and said, look, this is an issue. Like, why do we have to do this? Like, I've been an hour on a floor and I'm not even pregnant and I feel cold and miserable. And it just wasn't an experience that I feel that we should, that should be there. It should be nicer than this. It should be better than this. And I know there are beautiful studios, and I know there's studios all over the place, but I just felt that where I had been, there wasn't that much, there wasn't much of a choice. And this is where Limestone Yoga came about. And with Limestone Yoga, the aim initially was that we would create a space where people could come, male and females, pregnant with their babies, children could arrive into a space and feel safe, feel comfortable, feel warm, get a cup of tea, have a slice of toast, and be here as long as they wanted to, not to rush out the door, not in any panic. So in a lot of my classes, I have, especially for the mother and babies or the pregnancy yoga or the parent and toddler, they have the space for hours. It's not assigned, you have 1 hour, now you need to leave, I've got something else happening. So my aim there is that when mommies come in with their babies or pregnant mommies come in, that they have as much time as they want to relax. There's beds inside there. They're like, they're kind of like big quilts that they can lie on the floor, that if their baby's asleep, they can have their cup of tea, they can relax. And as I say to them, I don't have a class now until 7 o'clock tonight. You have 7 hours, so you can do whatever you like, you know, and they take that. And they take advantage of that. And I'd always have a cup of tea or a coffee here. And here in Curfin, we're very blessed. It's like, it's so lucky. And there's lovely walks all over the area. So if the car park is there, park your car. They can go in. If they go right, they're going up to the village. If they go left, they're going to a beautiful lake. If they want to go forward here, as you can see, Pat, the place is beautiful. There's beautiful scenery. And there's a gorgeous, where our land is, the River Fergus flows through it. They're welcome to bring their babies or their children. You know, once, obviously, we are a working farm. So once they have informed me about that, that's totally okay. But it is a nice place to be. Anyone that has been in here loves it. And it's about being safe and comfortable. So that our aim has worked. My dream has come true. Our dream has come true. People do feel that when they do arrive that they're safe.
Growing up, Colette, I never heard of wellness and taking care of ourselves and our mind. Were you conscious of wellness growing up? Were you conscious of yoga growing up?
Yes. But you know what, Pat, honestly, we had a great grown up, as in we were on a farm, we were by Bow River, there's no pressures, there was no television. You know, we did have a television, but we weren't sitting down for hours and hours watching television or watching these, the computers or anything like that. And I know I sound like a real old prune, but no, we were told go out into the fields. We were baling hay and we were cutting turf and we were swimming in Bow River. I had three brothers, and a sister. We were gone all of the time. We were out the yard. We had chickens, we had cows, we had calves. It was, when I look back at that, that's what I try to create here, you know, with my own kids, you know, go out and play, go out and go down the fields, go down, you know, and enjoy the fresh air. It's a lot harder though, because they do want to play their games. They do want to, you know, have friends over and everything like that. And that's fabulous. But for definitely where you're talking about mindfulness, that was our mindfulness. You know, we had time.
You didn't know it at the time.
No,
it was
we didn't
natural
know it
and
at
instinctive.
The time. Yeah. No, but most definitely now I know it. And so that's why in Limestone as well, we have, we're very lucky, as you see the farm, but we also have a mountain in the burn. And we're very lucky we own it, so we can go whenever we want to it. Oliver is a farmer of the burn. It's our winterage, so in the, and I'm sure you're familiar with the burn winterage, that the cows go up in the wintertime, they come down in the summertime. So our mindfulness for our kids, and now it's like everything, they're fighting with us now, they don't want to go up there, but is to go for a walk up the mountain. We're also very lucky we're beside Mullock Moor, so we'd go for a hike up to Mullock Moor, Lochavella Loop, you know, Curfin Village, there's loads of walks all over the place. So that's mindfulness in this day and age, in 2024, but that's what it was back in the day, you know, when I was growing up. It was, let's go for a walk. Let's head down the fields, picking blackberries, mushrooms, you know, God, picking stones, as everybody would remember, the picking stones and growing potatoes and weeding and all that kind of thing. And as much as you say that's not what, you know, we didn't enjoy it at the time or we didn't know it at the time, but most definitely now as an adult looking back, that was our mindfulness. That was our time of getting away and being free. And even with the cold water, you know, you have the mindfulness of going into the cold water. We jumped into Bow River. We didn't even know. The blood circulation there was, you know, was unreal. And we did that all of the time. You know, that was our getaway. That was what we did. So, yeah. So I have to say, did we know at the time? No, but most definitely now I'm trying to, I suppose, bring my own kids back to that, bring my own kids into that. That's why we have loads of animals. You know, we have goats. We did have chickens and with dogs and cats and guinea pigs and rabbits. And I suppose it's really to get them into a routine that who's fed the rabbits, who's fed this and who's, because that's what we had to do when we grew up. You know, we had to go out and feed the lambs. We had to go out and feed the cats. We had to go out and feed the chickens. And so it's bringing that routine back into our lives now. So it's very important.
Coming up, we'll hear more about this year's Burrinslow Food Festival and how it's as much about nourishing our bodies and souls through wellness as food. Welcome back to Atlantic Tales. The countdown is on to this year's Burrinslow Food Festival. The event, organised by Slow Food Clare, will take place on May 19th as part of a month-long festival of wellness hosted by the Burrin Ecotourism Network. This year's event will be all about nourishing body and soul through food and wellness. Colette Nagel is passionate about teaching yoga and runs Limestone Yoga Studio near Corrafin. She'll be bringing all her experience to the Burrinslow Food Festival, but what exactly is yoga?
So what is yoga all about? And this is where, I suppose, really, as somebody had said to me, is it really what it's meant to be, or is it really as good as what everybody says? So we'll start with, okay, if you come into my class, Pat, and you're like, I have no idea what yoga is about, and I've never done it before, and what do I do? So the first thing that I'd say to you is, look, it's your body. Your body is completely different from my body and everybody else's body. So I need you to tune into what's going on with you. So the template as such goes as being meditation. So we start with meditation and it's tuning inwards. You work with your breath work, which is alien to a lot of people, as much as we breathe every single day and you hear all of these comments. But you tuning into your breath and you tuning into what's going on with your body might have been the very first time that you've ever done this in your life. And so it seems very strange to some people and maybe even emotional to some people. And you see people giving this kind of like look of, oh, when you start guiding with the breath work. There's hundreds of different practices with breath work, and it's really, it's your superpower. It becomes something that you practice on every single day. So we start with that. Then we work with what's called the asana, or the movement. And again, I might be able to, you know, move my arms out wide. You might not be able to. You might have a shoulder issue. You might have something going on. So that's where I would also explain and guide you. You listen to what's going on with you. There's also props in most yoga studios, and every yoga studios, where you can use like bolsters or blocks or blankets or cushions. So that makes your practice more comfortable for you. So we'd always guide, you to use them. If you need to have a cushion underneath your sit bones, if you need to sit on something, please do so. There's chairs, there's walls. All of these things are props that you can use within yoga. So as far as yoga and levels and ability goes, there is yoga for everybody and everybody's body. So I would guide all different levels. You could have a class of all different levels. So you'd guide each level into using a prop or doing it in a different way. And then we move into what's called a meditation again at the end. So the meditation is where you've moved your body, you've now time to surrender and to relax. So then that becomes, and it can be, the most difficult part of the whole practice. And you'd wonder, because like you're lying on the floor, Colette, why would that be the most hardest part of the practice? Because people don't know how to let go. People don't know how to surrender. And people don't know, of course they do, but they don't know how to be guided into this. And sometimes it becomes scary. And sometimes it becomes alien, or it is alien to them. I know myself, when I first started practicing yoga, it's 19, 20 years ago, the meditation was the hardest part. And meditation was the hardest part because I was struggling to stop. My life, my head was busy. I had so much going on. For me to actually switch off was the hardest part. And I quote that in my classes. So the meditation then happens, and then we finish. And then there's always a question at the end, which is, how are you? How do you feel? Tune into what's going on with your body and what's going on with your mind and what's happening with you. And that can be sometimes a bit alien, because people don't ask each other anymore how they are, you know. And what's worse is you don't ask yourself how you are. You know, you don't tune into you anymore. Life is busy, and we all understand that. How many times today will you hear, I've been so busy, I'm so busy, I'm so busy, I never got to meet you because I was so busy. This is where you ask, what is yoga? It's all of those things. Tuning into your mind, your body, and you. Maybe for the first time in your life, maybe for the first time that week, but it's giving everybody that opportunity to come into Limestone Yoga for 1.5 hours a week. Just that, nothing more if you don't want to, and have that space for yourself. So that's what yoga is.
And yoga, you talked about children, you talked about pregnant women, you talked about mum and baby. Yoga is for everybody?
For everybody and everybody's body. So it is really important. And then it moves on from that if the mom, after having the baby, after coming to the mother and baby yoga, then when the babies are a little bit older, there's a parent and toddler yoga. Then there is, when if they don't want to come with their babies, there is a vinyasa flow yoga. And then if they can only come once a month, there is a restorative yoga. So restorative yoga is where, again, huge surrender. It's a complete calmness and relaxation. We also do retreats here. So there is a yin and sound bath yoga coming up actually in April. But this is all on my website. Then if anybody likes to get out and wants to get out in the fresh air, as much as it's raining, we have gone out in the middle of July, Pat, and it's been raining. If you bring your best gear, you know, it is about in Ireland now, and people are very upset about the weather and everything like that. But if you get rain gear, if you have your boots, you have your hat, it can be a magical experience. And where we're talking about the childhood earlier on, it brings you back to your inner child, because we didn't care what type of the weather it was outside. We went out regardless. So we do the hikes as well, more so in starting from May onwards. We do the hikes in the mountain in Pollock in the Burn, and they've ended up being very restorative, very therapeutic. And we also, I teach the yoga on the mountain. So we have a flat part of the mountain that we walk up to. Magical panoramic views.
It's amazing up here.
Yeah.
If we see a yoga session in a movie or on television, it's all with women.
Yeah.
It's not just for women.
Oh yeah, no, it's not. There also is, I also teach 2 men's yoga classes a week. Surprisingly enough, a lot of people get surprised when I say that. Yes, I have 2 men's yoga classes. One on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock and one on a Wednesday night at 6:30. So it accommodates both. It accommodates everybody's time and what they're able to do. So it's very important. And I have been teaching that for over, since we opened actually in May. I was approached here in Curfin. Was I teaching a men's yoga class? And I said, I'll create it. And so I did, and they came, which is brilliant. So we have 2 full classes every Tuesday and every Wednesday night.
From what backgrounds are these men?
Every background. You have businessmen, you have farmers, you have shopkeepers, you have builders, plasterers, everything. I'm trying to remember the people as well. So everybody. Yeah, an age group, it's from, not to give anyone's age away, but from 40 up to 65. So it's really good. It's really, really
so
good.
So people who have realized that in their life, there's so much happening, they haven't got time for themselves, and they're now learning how to unwind, how to relax after a day's work and maybe to slow the mind down. Is that what's happening?
Most definitely, but also social. Yeah. So again, with limestone yoga, there's no rush, there's no panic, there's no get out, you know, we don't have time to talk. There's always time to talk. There's always time for you to mix here. As you can see, Pat, we're in the snug and there's a couch, there's chairs. It's very comfortable. So you come out here, you can talk, you can have a conversation with each other. You know, there is no rush, there's no panic. There's time, which is, again, a huge, huge thing that we are forgetting about. Time and conversation. You have time and conversation in limestone whenever you want to. There's a cup of tea, you know, whatever you want to do. It's very important for people to take that time and to have that choice and to have a conversation.
The snug is just too snug. Let's go inside if we can, Colette, and have a look at your studio, because you've come a long way from that building next to the house where you only had maybe four or five people. You've come a long way since then.
Yes.
This is your studio. This is an immaculate space. Let's talk about the Burn Slow Food and how you got involved in that, what exactly you'll be doing during the course of that particular event.
So the Burn Slow Food event is on the 19th of May. It's on a Sunday. We became members of the abbreviation of BEN, B-E-N, the Burn Ecotourism Network. We became that in August of last year. Hugely supported. They are a great group of people to have. Like, we'd only opened up in May here in Limestone. So to have that support was huge. And great networking. So you're meeting everybody in the Burn between food and wellness and health, all within meetings. We have meetings every month and that. But going back to the Slow Food Fair event, there is a strong focus on wellness throughout the month of May, including the Burn Slow Food Festival and the promotion of top quality food and excellent healthy activities, such as we have yoga this year, mindfulness, meditation, walking, hiking and cycling. And it's all sure in this beautiful setting of the Burn. The one-day event and the Slow Food Festival showcases the best elements of food and wellness within the culture of Clare, and from the local growers and the producers and traders and wellness studio owners that make Clare such a unique and dynamic food and wellness destination. And the Burn is well renowned for excellent food from the fertile rock. As you go through the Burn, you can see the limestone. The limestone is absolutely amazing, but it's also really, really good to grow food on. But it's also lovely, and you might not be familiar with this, Pat, but when we teach yoga in the Burn, we actually teach on a slab of limestone, and it's magical because the heat, if you're on your bare feet, the heat from the sun is really, really
insulated,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Insulated, yes. Mm. And so as well as that, you're feeling grounded, more supported. You know, you couldn't get more natural, you couldn't get more holistic, and you couldn't get more therapeutic than outside yoga on the Burn limestone. It's really, really beautiful. And it's very, very peaceful. So it is an ideal time or an ideal place to have yoga, is on the Burn and outside. So,
and of course, this would be a food festival, but it's more than just a food festival now, because the wellness element of it. How important do you believe, Colette, that is?
Well, look, wellness is your health is your wealth. Isn't that what they say? And your health starts off with inward. So it starts off with your food intake and how healthy you're eating. And so this is a brilliant opportunity to go up and see and speak to people about your health, about food, and then bringing wellness into that as well, which is the full package.
You probably won't be surprised if farmers and other people during the course of that event on the day come up to you, because you already have farmers coming to your yoga classes. You're going to try and encourage others to take on the practice of yoga.
Oh yes, most definitely. I think this whole idea of yoga being only for a certain type of people, that's not the case anymore, Pat. There's more and more people coming to the classes, not only just with me, but all over the Burn, that are going to see what it's like and seeing if it's for them, obviously, and to see whether they enjoy it or not. But more and more people are liking it, and more people are taking that step to go and see what this wellness, yoga, mindfulness and meditation is about. It's very important. And then you bring food into that, it's absolutely perfect. I will be teaching a yoga class on the day of the 19th of May in the pavilion in Listoon Varna. This will give everybody, or some people, whoever is interested, the opportunity to see what it's all about. There will be breath work, there'll be some gentle yoga and then meditation. So if anybody is interested on that on the day, they can come and meet me. I will be there. I will have a stand there. Myself and Oliver will have a stand there, table number 5 in the pavilion. And we will be giving everybody the opportunity to see what we're all about.